here's two guys who can handle the truth.
I want the truth.
You can't handle the truth.
But we can. Xavier Will. Scott Goble. RX Muscle Australia proudly presents Aussie Muscle Radio. Yeah!
Welcome to another episode of Aussie Muscle Radio, 28th April 2014. I'm your host, Xavier Wills, and I'm joined, as always, by my co-host and compatriot in crime, Scott Goble. Scotty, how are we doing this week?
We're doing well, mate. Had a nice, quiet weekend, and next weekend up in Townsville doing another mass nutrition training camp. So, a busy one coming.
Very nice. So, is that a two-day thing, the training camp?
Yeah, it's a two-day one, and they're pretty hardcore up there. They sold out straight away, so it's just me and Luke McNally doing this one, but we'll be looking forward to punishing some North Queenslanders.
I heard a rumour, actually, that you guys might be coming over and doing a Perth one.
Yes, you would have heard that rumour, because I think Gary's organising it from your sponsor's gym. What's their name again? Power?
Well, 24/7 Power Fitness in Wanneroo.
Thank you. So, it looks like we'll be over there. I think Shembury was the one that was holding us up and creating dramas as per usual, but I think we're over there again.
Awesome. Good to hear. But, Scotty, this is going to be the 2014 Arnold Classic Brazil wrap-up show. We're going to be talking about kind of what went down and all the controversy and stuff surrounding that show, because it definitely wasn't a result. I mean, our picks were way, way off. When I asked you, in the last show, I think I said, can Tony Freeman place in top five? And you said, no way. He actually did, which is kind of surprising, and maybe some people thought he shouldn't have. And obviously the winner at the end of the day was Steve Kukulo, who came out on top. And, I mean, Dave Plumbo said in his wrap-up, he said on the play-by-play, he said he's confused why Steve Kukulo was in the first call-out. So for him to come out and win after, you know, Dave saying, you know, he thought he had him in, you know, fifth or something like the fourth or fifth or something like that, it's pretty amazing Steve Kukulo came out and actually won it.
Yeah, it is, and pretty much every play-by-play, no matter which site you go to, is kind of under the same impression. When he first walked out, they were like, yeah, Kukulo looks good, balanced, in reasonable condition, you know, just the usual Kukulo sort of critique. And then they had everyone else, you know, Lionel Bieke and John De La Rosa, and these guys were absolutely raving about. So then he makes first call-out, and then he's in the middle, and everyone's just thinking, no, well, he can't, you know, it looks like he's winning, but he can't be, because all these other guys are better than him, so they must just be looking at him for third and fourth or something like this, and then, lo and behold, he wins it.
Yeah, I mean, let's talk about Steve Kukulo and his physique. Like, in terms of when you look at him and you say, is he in condition? You'd say, yes, he's in condition. He's got straight glutes and, you know, he's got lines and some lines that he hasn't really had, you know, many times before. And, you know, does he have, you know, good shape and stuff? Yeah, he's got good shape. You know, does he have a good amount of muscle? Yeah, he's got a good amount of muscle, but he doesn't have that granite hard look. I mean, yeah, he's got, he's conditioned, but he looks flat in a way. Like, even though he does have a lot of muscle, do you kind of get that look from him? Because, I mean, you got other guys in the lineup that just look, you know, granite hard.
Yeah, he didn't look like he was in 100% condition. I agree. He looked at like he was a bit flat. And the thing with Stevie, he's very, very wide, but he doesn't seem to have a whole lot of depth through his chest and his back. That's what really seems to be lacking from a development standpoint. And I thought, you know, it kind of gets exposed in a lot of poses when he opens up and does a front double by. His chest looks completely flat. Even his rear lat spread and his rear double by, there's a lot less going on than you know, the upper back of a Bieke or a De La Rosa or a Warmerel. So, he has some flaws to his physique, but at the same time, like you say, he is big. He is, you know, he does have good shape, and he was in good condition. Nothing was absolutely mind-blowing, but everything was pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, when you look at him overall, like, you know, it's not his fault that he, you know, got given the first place trophy, and I think it was a decent version of Steve Kukulo. But a version to actually win this show, I don't think. I didn't see his physique at that level. Let's talk about second place finisher, Warmerel. I mean, they were obviously two guys that battled it out at you know, an amateur level and then into the pros when they competed in the New York Pro. What did you think of Warner? Do you think, would you have had Warner over Steve Kukulo?
Yeah, probably. I probably would have just. Yeah, I probably would have had them like third and fourth. Yeah, look, one looked great. He's growing every single show. His upper body is actually pretty spectacular. It's just that he's got that little disparity between his upper body and his lower body. From the side, his legs look pretty good. From the back, they're not too bad. But, you know, from the front, in some poses, he just looks a little shallow through the quads. So that's, in my opinion, enough to hold him back over a couple of the other guys. But, yeah, I think condition-wise, he's just got a slightly different look to Kuklo. Maybe he was fuller, but he's just got, you know, more striations, I guess, and maybe slightly deeper separation. So, yeah, I liked Juan over Kuklo.
Do you know who Juan was working with for this comp? Because he wasn't working with Dave this time around.
It's a good question. Yeah, I'm not 100% sure.
He actually, I think he actually added, I mean, obviously, you know, you get to a point where you're going to slowly add, you know, you're going to add muscle a little bit slower. But I thought he actually added more muscle every year, like a tremendous amount of muscle every year he's working with Dave. So I don't know if that's, you know, but he moved away from that. But obviously, you know, second place finish at Arnold Brazil was a massive, massive achievement.
Yeah, he should be happy with his placing. And he has still improved it.
Yeah.
Like you said, yeah, it was surprising to see him move away from Dave because he was just on a steady upward trend and nailed his condition absolutely every time. But I think he might just have that sort of metabolism where it's hard to mess up the conditioning.
Yeah. I don't know if you've seen recent pictures of Akeem Williams, who's working with Dave Palumbo.
I haven't, no.
Oh, he's looking like, what's his name, Victor Richards.
Yeah, okay.
He's looking just crazy. Like, he looks like he's added an extra, I don't know, 5-10 kilos of muscle. He just looks insane. So he's going to be competing, I think, at the Dallas Europa in a few weeks. I don't know if he's going to be in condition, but he just looks enormous. But, yeah, anyway, we'll get back to the show. John De La Rosa places third. That's Chris Aceto's guy in this show. What did you think of John, and do you think it was kind of he deserves a place in that third spot?
No, I probably would have had him second, but he's a freak with some just mind-blowing poses, mind-blowing shapes in his poses. When he opens up for a front double bicep, it's absolutely freaky. I'm not even sure who to compare it to, but his taper's ridiculous. His arms are enormous. He's got the lower body to balance it out. I think he can still get a tiny, tiny bit harder, or maybe his lower body can or something. Quad separation can be a little bit deeper. There's something that tells me he's not absolutely 100%, but at the same time, you know, he's still got the striated glutes and the detailed back and everything else. So I was really, really impressed with him. I'm amazed at how much he's improved in the last year or two.
Yeah, I totally agree as well. I mean, he's got an awesome physique, and I think he definitely deserves a top three, maybe even a top two in this show. Lionel Blakey in fourth. This was the big shock, I think, for most people. He was around that middle kind of the first call-out, like he's standing next to Steve. And, I mean, it kind of blows my mind that he actually was in that fourth position, because to me, he looked probably harder than he's been most of the time before. He looked probably the biggest he's ever been on stage. He just looked so full and round. He just looked absolutely insane. He still does have that kind of look to his physique where he does look kind of watery or something, where it just doesn't look like he's... I don't think he's ever really going to get really granite hard, you know, like you'd see, you know, Ronnie Coleman or someone like that. But, I mean, I think this is probably the best ever Lionel Blakey, in my opinion.
I agree. I think it was his absolute best ever showing. And I think from a conditioning standpoint, he was as good as any of the other guys in that top four. I don't think anyone really dominated him from a conditioning standpoint. So the fact that he has by far the most cartoonish muscle bellies and the wildest shape and everything else, I thought he won every single pose from the front, you know, standing relaxed in the front, lat spreads, everything from the front, I thought he dominated. From the side, I thought he was winning a lot of shots. And from the back, look, the one complaint people have on Blakey is he's lacking a little hamstring, lacking a little calf, and his legs aren't quite as impressive when you look at him from the back as they are from the front. But that's just, you know, one aspect of the physique. And, you know, you can make the same argument about Juan, you know, with Steve from the back, his upper back shallow. I thought Blakey absolutely held his own in the back poses. Everyone sort of had a little deficiency. And because he dominated so much from the front, I thought the show was his.
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, he looked like the best bodybuilder up there. He looked like, you know, probably in that top four, he looked like the biggest to me. He looked like he had the best, you know, structure. He had, you know, conditioning on par with everyone else. Maybe Weimaraul was slightly harder, you know, you might say. But, I mean, when you look at Baiki's quads, he's got that kind of, that Kai Green look where they're just fully striated everywhere. So, I don't know how they didn't give the win to him, but in fourth place, I mean, you know, I thought he'd be really disappointed, but he seemed to be pretty kind of content with it from what I've heard and stuff. But I imagine at Dallas Europa, he's probably going to come in and look to get a win there.
Yeah, it's like you say, you just, if you scan the lineup, I reckon if you showed that lineup to someone that knows nothing about bodybuilding and said, who's the best bodybuilder, I think everyone would be drawn to Bianchi.
Yep, I totally agree. Totally agree. In fifth place, I mentioned before, Tony Freeman. This is kind of a pretty good result for Tony because, you know, in a show of 14 guys where basically everyone is quality in this lineup, fifth place has to be a pretty good notch in his belt because I don't think many people were expecting him to maybe even crack the top 10. You know, people would maybe be around 10th to 14th or something. So for Tony Freeman to come get fifth is a big achievement. But, Scotty, did he deserve that fifth place?
I don't have a massive problem with it. I probably would have had a couple other guys in front of him. But look, he looked great. It was the best conditioning he's brought in ages. He seemed to be full because every muscle was, you know, really popping and striding when he posed. He was pretty conditioned from the back, which has been a bit of an issue. He wasn't, you know, the full striated glutes or anything, but he was very hard. And he's just got that big imposing frame and that massive silhouette. So, I don't have a huge issue with Tony placing fifth. I probably would have had him down around seventh, but he did look great. Much better than I anticipated.
Yeah, totally agree, yeah. And Marius Doan, or however you pronounce his last name, he places in sixth. I think he got eighth last week, or the week before, sorry, in a much smaller show. He did, for me, look a little bit fuller in this show, maybe even a little bit harder as well. I mean, his physique is impressive, and he's really, I mean, you know, after that last show, it was kind of like, oh, you know, it wasn't a good comeback. This time around, though, obviously, you know, places sixth in a much, much tougher lineup. Do you think we're going to see more from this guy? And what do you think of his physique?
I really rated his physique. There are a few poses I thought of his which are absolutely outstanding. I agree. I think he was definitely fuller. I think he looked like he just ate for the whole week and put on, you know, about 4 or 5 kilos. I thought he was just heaps rounder and... yeah, just totally filled out, but he kept the good condition. So, I think he can definitely do damage in the future. I think he got noticed in a deep lineup. He beat some good guys. He'll get a look in. Is he going to continue on with Dallas and New York, do you know?
I'm not sure yet, but, I mean, a guy like this, I imagine he probably would because he's got nothing to lose. And now he's established himself as, you know, sixth in this lineup. If he goes on to do, you know, Dallas, I don't know how many of these guys are actually going to do Dallas as well. You know, perhaps he moves up, you know, 3-4 spots or something, gets in, you know, gets some Olympic qualification points. So I think it'd be wise for him to definitely do that show. And, you know, you never know, New York Pro, he could be up there in the top 3 or top 4 or something. So I think it'd be wise for him to go on and do that. But William Bonac in seventh, he was our pick, he was your pick, my pick, and even Mick picked William Bonac over his favourite, Lionel Baiki. I mean, this is going to be pretty disappointing for him, but, I mean, he wasn't in that razor-sharp condition he was in Australia, and on his physique, I find on a lot of the shorter guys, it really matters a lot if they're not in that razor-sharp condition. It looked like his physique just didn't maybe just flow as well when he wasn't as hard.
Yeah, I think that's exactly it, because he was still in good shape, you know, he had striated glutes and stuff, but it just wasn't that absolutely off-the-charts, grainy striated from head to toe look that he had in Australia, so he did get penalised for it pretty harshly. You know, you could probably have him anywhere from fourth on down, I guess. But, yeah, look, it's kind of amazing because, you know, we were talking about him as a top six Olympia guy, and all of a sudden, he can't make the top six at the Arnold Brazil. So, it's funny. Maybe he would have been better off just not doing the show and holding on to that momentum and hitting another one.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I kind of mentioned that with Justin Compton. You know, is it better to ride the momentum? I think definitely in this lineup, if Justin had come in and done this and looked anything like he did 2 weeks ago, I think he would have absolutely blitzed the field because, you know, John De La Rosa, if we thought he should have got second, then... I think Justin Compton kind of pretty much killed it 2 weeks ago, so I think he definitely would have come in and won this lineup. But we talked about that with his momentum, you know. Is he better off to, you know, keep that momentum and keep that kind of, I suppose, you know, unknown and that hype about him going into the Olympia. And I think, you know, it almost like John De La Rosa's placing in this show and how good he looked against these other guys almost justifies how good Justin Compton is going to be, you know, on a big stage at an Olympia type level.
Yeah, yeah, I agree with that. And, I find it kind of funny as well, like with Bonac, he beat Evan Setapani and Branch Warren, you know, which are two extremely established pros, and he beat them fairly comfortably in our eyes at least. And then he goes over there and he can't beat, you know, the, you know, Dona and Kuklo and Juan Morel and these guys. It's just goes to show you how, you know, anyone can move up or down a number of placings just depending on their conditioning on the day.
Yeah, and I love how close a lot of these guys are now. I think a lot of these shows are bringing out the best in a lot of these guys, like, you know, doing it, having got, you know, all the Arnold Classics and stuff now. It seems like there's a new crop that's kind of moved up, and it seems like there's probably, you know, there's more guys around that, you know, that would normally be placing maybe 5th to 20th in the Olympia. It seems like there's more of those guys now, so the actual qualifying for Olympia seems like it's going to be a lot tighter this year. It just seems like there's, I don't know, just a more dense field, and you look at this lineup, you've got guys, you know, like Fred Smalls, for example, who places 10th in arguably his, you know, all-time best condition and one of his best looks he's brought to the stage, and, you know, he's placing 10th in a lineup like this. So it's just, it's pretty amazing how much it's, I suppose, kind of advanced in that middle kind of area of pros. But we'll talk about the Aussie Greek, Mike Kefalianos. He comes into this show. For me, he wasn't at his all-time best in terms of conditioning and whatnot. But I did say, I think, in the show preview, having guys like William Bonac and John De La Rosa would help Mike in this lineup. And obviously, you know, Bato Abspor as well. William Bonac, you know, Mike Kefalianos and Bato Abspor, all, you know, 7th, 8th and 9th. Obviously, they were being compared and stuff. Do you think that obviously helped Mike place 8th in this lineup?
I think he was just the 8th best bodybuilder up there. I don't know if it was, these are the short guys or tall guys. I mean, De La Rosa's not tall, but he was in amongst the tall guys up the top there. So, look, it probably didn't hurt him, but I think at the end of the day, he got 8th place on the fact that he's balanced and well-conditioned, even though he's not the biggest bloke and not the most proportional guy up there.
Yeah, yeah, and I think he deserved that, you know, around the 8th place as well. Bato Abspor, he comes in 9th. From the pictures I was seeing that Dennis James were putting out, you know, a few days before and a week before and all that stuff of Bato, he seemed to be a little bit harder in those pictures that Dennis James was putting up. And obviously, you know, pictures in a hotel room is different to on stage, but he just seemed to be holding a little bit of water on stage or something, and it just didn't seem to kind of translate to the stage exactly. But he was still, you know, great. He's still got that crazy, crazy muscle. He's just so, so full through the legs, and his conditioning was good without being, you know, that outstanding conditioning that I was kind of expecting from the photos.
Yeah, I was exactly the same when I saw him. I was like, oh, okay, he's just a little bit smoother than I expected. So I don't know if you did the Dennis James massive carb up where you look fantastic in the gym and the photo shoots beforehand, but you just spill over slightly, go off that little bit of extra fullness. But yeah, he probably could have climbed up a, you know, 2 or 3 notches had he been absolutely 100% on the money like he was in those photos.
Yep. What do you think of Fred Smalls? Do you think this was like his best ever, or where do you think it kind of rates in terms of what we've seen from Fred?
Nah, I think it was about the same as Orlando. I think he's, you know, hard, but without being fully striated. I think he's got a little ways to go conditioning-wise, and again, he just doesn't have anything, any standout feature of his physique. He's not unbelievably wide or unbelievably thick or, you know, tall or anything like that. So he's just a balanced guy with some good shape that's missing out on that super high-level conditioning.
Yep. Robert Piotrkowicz, he comes back in this show. It's only... when did he compete last with that torn tricep? Was that at the Olympia just gone?
Yeah, I think it was, yeah.
Yeah, so he's come back at this show. You think, you know, a guy that's torn his tricep might have a bit of time off after that. He doesn't. He comes in outstanding condition once again. Packs a fair bit of muscle. His arms are maybe a little bit, you know, undersized, and he doesn't have the best in terms of, you know, midsection and whatnot. But, I mean, this guy always brings condition and always allows him to beat some other guys.
Yeah, absolutely. He didn't claim as many scalps as usual. Had it been held in Europe, he might have placed a few spots higher again. But Yeah, he's a lock from a conditioning standpoint. He just doesn't have the prettiest physique.
Yep. Ed Nunn in 12th. I looked at Ed Nunn. I saw just a tiny bit of video of him from the front. He didn't look too bad. He hit his front double bicep with those crazy, you know, how he's got those crazy full biceps. And I thought, oh, he doesn't look too bad, you know, maybe a little bit flat, but, you know, I expected to kind of see him place in the top 10, but he places in 12th here. I saw some photos, actually, after this, and I went back and looked on RX Muscle and looked at all the photos, and he wasn't as hard as he needed to be, and also, he just looks flat. I don't know if it's age that's catching up with him or what it is, but he looks like he needs to add a considerable amount of muscle, not just to his, you know, hamstrings and legs, but also now to his upper body, you know, through his back and whatnot, just to fill out his frame, because he's a tall guy.
Yeah, I don't know what Ed's going to do. I think, like you say, he's got to be close to Tony Freeman's age. He didn't turn pro until he was about 40. So, yeah, I don't know if we're going to see a whole lot of improvements or see him slide, you know, up the ladder. I think he's... The judges have never really liked him or given him a favourable call out. So I think we're going to see him towards the bottom of the pack in shows of this calibre.
Yeah. I did used to think he used to get a lot of raw deals. Obviously, he did win that pro show. When was it? I think he had maybe Ben White in the lineup, and there's a few other good guys in there, and he won that pro show, but since then he really hasn't got, I think, lookings he's deserved, and now he seems to be kind of almost going past where, you know, where he's going to be able to make improvements to his physique, so, which is kind of unfortunate, because I think Ed, you know, like from, you know, he came out to Australia and he seemed like a really nice guy, and you know, but if he can obviously still compete in some small shows and still be competitive in that, and, you know, play some top fives and stuff like that, and maybe get his ticket back to the Olympia, then that's obviously an achievement for him. And I suppose he has to have kind of goals like that now instead of, you know, taking out pro shows and placing top three in shows like this. Martin Kilstrom in 13th. We talked about him before the show. Yeah, I totally agree with what you said on the pre-show, Scotty. His physique just isn't pretty now. I mean, his stomach, it seems like it's all kind of got a bit thick and blocky through there, and it's just not what it was. I mean, he never had the most pretty physique, but it seems like it's got a bit further the wrong way.
Yeah, absolutely. I think he probably realised that he was never going to be the most aesthetic bloke on stage, so he may as well be the biggest. He's probably achieved that. I don't know what he was competing at, but it would have been the high 200s, but it just doesn't look good. It's not put well together. The waist is way too big, and yeah, he looked in pretty good condition from the front, but he was way off from the back. So yeah, he needed a few more weeks of dieting, and needs to somehow figure out how to get that waist down.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to happen, because it looks like a lot of that's established actually muscle in there. So yeah, you'd have to, you know, atrophy some of, you know, some of his obliques and stuff like that, because they're just so thick. But and then obviously in last place, you predicted it before the show, Julio Balestrin. I don't know. That's how I'm guessing pronounce it, but he's a Brazilian guy. And he didn't look as bad as we thought he would. But yeah, obviously he was outclassed in a lineup like this. We've just quality from, you know, first down to, you know, pretty much last. So, but that's it, Scotty. That's it from the 2014 Arnold Brazil. I just want to mention, obviously, Tony Doherty was on the mic, and Dave Palumbo, I don't know if you watched the wrap-up on RX Muscle, but Dave Palumbo was all praise for Tony Doherty on the mic.
Not surprising. Congratulations to Tony. I think, judging by his Instagram and Facebook, he's had an absolute ball over there hanging out with his new buddy Arnold. So, I look forward to hearing the stories, and I'm sure you'll get him on the show and get a few stories when he gets back.
Yeah. I wanted to see if I can get him this week. I'm like, nah, he'll be either flying or he'll be, you know, like hectically busy or something, you know, having meetings or whatever. But yeah, I'm very keen to get him on the next episode of Aussie Muscle Radio, because I'm sure he'll have, you know, some great stories and perhaps be able to tell us about, you know, some. I think he had lunch, breakfast or lunch with Arnold once or twice, and did you see the photo, Scotty, that he posted, I think, yesterday, where he's like almost like ushering, him and Lee Thompson are ushering Arnold through the expo?
Yeah, I did.
I love that. I'm like, that's so cool. Like, Tony's over there, he's the MC, he's like security, he's like doing everything, like pretty much like what he does in Australia, like he does his comp. So, oh, that was cool. But on that note, Scotty, we're going to head to a break, and we'll be back in a few minutes for your Ask Scotty segment and bodybuilding yes or no.
International Protein is an Australian company owned by qualified food scientist, IFBB Pro, and three-time world champion Christine Enville. At International Protein, we don't believe in selling overhyped or fad products, so you can be assured that if a product has our name on it, the formulation has been developed based on the latest nutritional research in the field of strength and conditioning performance. At the core of International Protein, there are five key principles: taste, quality, affordability, results, and flexibility. Christine Enville is proud to share her successful nutritional formulations with people who are serious about their body, their sport, and their performance, so they too can reach their ultimate goals. Look for International Protein in all good health food and supplement stores. Paying inflated prices for products which are full of hype and fillers? At Bulk Nutrients, you get the purest products available direct from our factory. There are no middlemen, contractors, distributors, or shopfronts. Bulk Nutrients stocks protein, carbs, aminos, pre-workout recovery, encapsulated products, fat burners, test boosters, and so much more. Bulk Nutrients is 100% Australian-owned and operated, and will give you higher quality and better prices guaranteed. So visit bulknutrients.com.au. It's your one-stop shop. Mass Nutrition is Australia's premier sports supplement provider, with over 13 stores Australia-wide, stocking everything from protein powders and pre-workout mixes to weightlifting accessories and gym apparel. Mass Nutrition covers all your fitness needs. Owned and operated independently by Australia's best bodybuilders, you know you're not only getting the best brands at the best prices, but you're getting truly expert advice as well. Fuel your fire at one of our Mass Nutrition retail outlets or shop online at massnutrition.com.au.
Here's to the athlete, the bodybuilder, the figure competitor, those who are committed, those who sacrifice, those who want to be different, the ones that get up an hour before they have to, that put their body on the line for their goals and are never, ever satisfied with close enough. You can ridicule them, but you can never ignore them, because they challenge the way people make them think about themselves. And while the masses try to confine them and dismiss them, at ATP we celebrate their achievements, their dedication, and why they improve the world. Visit us on Facebook or at www.atpscience.com.
My Muscle Chef is the perfect solution for anyone who doesn't want to spend hours cooking, cleaning, and doing groceries every week. You can now focus on your training knowing your diet is taken care of. All you need to do is microwave and eat. To order, simply jump online at MyMuscleChef.com or call 1-300-364-993.
Welcome back to Aussie Muscle Radio. I'm joined once again by Scott Goble, and we are here for his weekly segments, Bodybuilding Yes or No and Ask Scotty. Scott, are we ready?
Bring it on.
All right, okay, we'll start with bodybuilding yes or no. First question is, will Lana Blakey win the Dallas Europa show?
No, that's Steve Kuklo's home ground. He won a dubious decision there over Sobeld last year. He's the defending champion. He's coming back for more. If he couldn't beat him this weekend, I don't think he's going to beat him there. So that, I reckon Kuklo will repeat.
Yeah, I really hope Blakey wins. I really, really do. But yeah, but based on obviously Viana Brazil, I think, yeah, Kuklo will probably win that one as well. Okay, next question. Will Big Ramy win more than one pro show this year?
Very good question. I'll just say probably not. I think he'll win the New York pro. But then I think that he'll use that as the qualifier for the Olympia, which he's not going to win. And if he chooses to do a few post-Olympia shows, look, normally Phil and Kai hang around for a little while at least, and that's going to be enough to knock him off. So unless he just goes on a tear and does all the post-Olympia shows, I don't think he's going to get a second one under his belt.
Yeah. Well said, Scotty. Now, last question. Was Vince Taylor's comeback in when he came back in Australia more impressive than Lou Ferrigno's comeback?
Yeah, good question. No, I don't think it was. Lou Ferrigno came back and was, well, they were both about the same spot, I think, in the Olympia lineup when they came back, around that 10th spot. But Ferrigno had more time off. Ferrigno is a movie star. Now, I'm going to give it to Lou. The amount of hype that was around when Lou Ferrigno came back, and there was a war between the WBF and the IFBB to sign him, and all this sort of drama and speculation, and you know, the rumors that he's going to be the first guy to be 300 pounds on stage and all this sort of stuff. It was huge, absolutely huge when Frigno came back. Vince Taylor was very impressive, but Frigno was something else again, being the Hulk and in Pumping Iron. He was a bigger chunk of bodybuilding history. So no, I'm going to give it to Frigno.
Yeah, I totally agree with that one. Even though I wasn't around at the time, but it was, from everything I've seen and stuff like that, I think I totally agree. Okay, we'll move on. Ask Scotty segment. First question is, if you had to rank the number one guru, bodybuilding guru, based on the current crop of pro athletes, who would it be?
Oh, okay. Well, Harney's obviously got Mr. Olympia, but everyone says Harney's a whiny little bitch, so we can't go with it. I shouldn't say everybody says that, but he's not the easiest bloke to get along with, apparently. We've got Chad Nichols, obviously, has an amazing track record with Ronnie, but these days he's not really killing it with anyone. You know, Pekulski's last showing wasn't overly impressive.
Yeah.
Look, Aceto is almost you can't miss option, it seems. Like, De La Rosa looks fantastic. You know, Centipani comes in at his best. You know, what are you going to do with Cedric? You know, he comes in at his best, but if he rocks up to the Arnold in Columbus without any food and carbs up on room service, then there's only so much you can do as a guru. I'd probably have to say Aceto's the man because he's by far the most consistent, and he works with a fairly diverse bunch, and he generally brings them in at their best. You know, they may not be 100%, but he always improves them. So I'm going to go with Aceto.
Yeah, and Aceto's so honest as well. The thing is, like, he'll talk about a guy, and he's been obviously pumping up De La Rosa and stuff a lot lately, and I was kind of thinking, De La Rosa probably won't place, you know, he won't be up there in Miss Arnold, Brazil. He'll probably be down around 5th or whatever. But no, you know, Chris was right. He was up in that, you know, that top three. So he, and, you know, arguably he could have been, you know, top two as well. So, yeah, Aceto's obviously doing good things. You know, he's got Cedric, he's got Sean Roden, he's got some small names as well that he works with, and they've always come in well. You know, he obviously worked with Troy Owls and brought him in at his best. I mean, he's got a very, very good track record. So he worked with Jay. I think people forget that. He worked with Jay for the last Olympia, and considering what Jay was at, you know, at 16 weeks out or 12 weeks out or whatever, I thought he helped Jay bring a pretty good package to that Olympia. So, yeah, not a bad choice there, Scotty. Next question is, what's your thoughts on carb cycling in an off-season scenario?
I think it makes some sense, I guess. Like, you don't... I think if you just keep doing the same thing over and over again, it's when your body starts to resist against it. If you have a few low-carb days in there, maybe increase your fats, increase your insulin sensitivity, things like that, it's probably only going to benefit you long-term. I think variety is exactly what your body needs from a nutritional standpoint. So it's probably beneficial if you do it smart and those high-carb days coincide with you know, days where you have a huge anaerobic workload, you know, leg days or whatever. That's just logical to me. So I think it could be beneficial. I think, you know, if you looked at things over the course of a week and you said, on average, I took in this many carbs and this many calories, and you did just space it out over the 7 days, the result's not going to be dramatically different. But I just have a, you know, intuitive feeling that it could be mildly beneficial. But we're probably talking, you know, 1 or 2% or something ridiculous.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with that as well. And even by instinct now, when, you know, I have, you know, like a diet I kind of follow, I guess, not to a T, but, you know, off season, but I have a diet I follow. But on, you know, days where I won't train and stuff, instead of having my post-workout shake, I'll just have, you know, something. I'll have a meal with a bit more fats, and I might, you know, drop a carb meal and just have some extra fats and stuff like that. So it's almost by instinct, you know, you don't need all, you know, by logically thinking, you don't need all those carbs. Maybe you'll just have some fats instead. And like you said, increase your insulin sensitivity and things like that. It just makes a lot of sense to me. And I think that's what, I mean, a lot of people are leaning towards that now, the more high fats diet rather than just, you know, carbs and protein for 8 meals a day.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I think, like you say, it's probably as much psychological as it is physiological, mixing it up. So, yeah, if you're smart about it and you know, put a bit of thought into it, it's probably going to do you good.
Exactly. Last question. What's your favourite Arnold movie?
Favourite Arnold movie? Oh, have to be probably Terminator 2. Predator was pretty awesome. First Terminator was good, but yeah, probably Terminator 2. I went to Sabotage on Friday night. I went to the one and only screening of Arnold's new movie because it's going straight to DVD.
Is it really?
Yeah, it was going to be released in the Australian cinemas, but because it performed so poorly in the American box office, it got one premiere screening, and then it's on the DVD in a couple of months. So, yeah, look, it's kind of just a cliche action flick. As an Arnold fan or a fan of just switching your brain off and watching some mind-numbing violence, it's a good movie. But if you want plot and, you know, great acting and things like that, it's not the movie for you.
If you're going to an Arnold movie, you're never going to get great acting, really. So I don't think you're going to an Arnold movie for that. But did you end up seeing what's it called? Is it called Escape Plan? The
yeah.
movie?
Yeah, I watched that, I think, the day before I competed. I think I had that in the hotel room. That wasn't too bad, him and Stallone.
I liked that movie, actually. I wasn't expecting much because I hadn't heard much about it, but I really liked that one.
Yeah, that wasn't too bad. Yeah, so I think his next one's Expendables 3, where he's got a slightly bigger part again. But, I think I've still seen every single Arnold movie he's ever released.
Really?
Yeah, I think so.
I've got to actually go back and watch some, because I've seen some when I was like really young and I just can't remember them, so I've got to go back and watch some of them. But Scotty, that's it for the Ask Scotty segment and bodybuilding yes or no. Is there anything you want to mention before we wrap it up?
No, well, if you're in Townsville and you want to come along to the Mass Nutrition Training Camp, bad luck, it's sold out, but you can come along to the seminar. You can book those tickets online, we'd love to see you there. And if you're in Melbourne, then go to Mass Mooney Ponds, where you can always get some good advice and supplements at the best price.
Exactly. So that's it for another episode. Actually, no, it's not it for another episode of Aussie Muscle Radio. We've got plenty more after a break. I've actually, I was talking to Campbell McCullum, who's obviously a criminal defence lawyer, and we're going to be getting him on, hopefully going to be interviewing him today. He's a hard man to get a hold of because he's so busy with all his work and stuff, but hopefully we'll have him on after the break. If not, I've got a couple of other guests, possible guests lined up, and we've got our 2 minutes with a scientist segment, and then we'll have our first ever segment with Michael Galley from Thailand. So it'll be interesting to hear about all everything that he's been up to, and apparently he's already fallen off his moped that he requested. So
I look forward to hearing from Nick.
Yeah, it'll be good. So that's it for you and me, Scotty. Stay tuned, and we'll be back in 2 minutes.
Editor-in-Chief of RX Muscle Australia, Xavier Wills, is an amateur bodybuilder who's won state titles and competed on the national level. He's been competing since the age of 16 and wants to bring his knowledge to you. Xavier offers full off-season and contest preparation plans at affordable prices to get you shredded and ready to hit the stage without sacrificing that hard-earned muscle. Xavier keeps in constant contact with his clients and offers text message support, weekly Skype or phone calls, and personalized assessments to keep you on track and get the results you desire. You can contact Xavier Wills on his official Facebook page by searching for his name. You can also find Xavier on rxmuscle.com.au, or you can send him an email at xavierwills@rxmuscle.com.au. Get in shape now. Contact Xavier Wills today.
Need that edge in your training to push past barriers, break PBs, and take the body you've been working so hard for to the next level? Well, look no further. Gripped Fitness, the brand that supports the industry and Australia's top athletes. Gripped has a complete range of lifting accessories and apparel designed to get you lifting more, while providing the needed support and aesthetics to take your body to the next level. Check them out at www.gripped.com.au. Get a grip.
International Protein is an Australian company owned by qualified food scientist, IFBB Pro, and three-time world champion Christine Enville. At International Protein, we don't believe in selling overhyped or fad products, so you can be assured that if a product has our name on it, the formulation has been developed based on the latest nutritional research in the field of strength and conditioning performance. At the core of International Protein, there are five key principles: taste, quality, affordability, results, and flexibility. Christine Enville is proud to share her successful nutritional formulations with people who are serious about their body, their sport, and their performance, so they too can reach their ultimate goals. Look for International Protein in all good health food and supplement stores. Paying inflated prices for products which are full of hype and fillers? At Bulk Nutrients, you get the purest products available direct from our factory. There are no middlemen, contractors, distributors, or shopfronts. Bulk Nutrients stocks protein, carbs, aminos, pre-workout recovery, encapsulated products, fat burners, test boosters, and so much more. Bulk Nutrients is 100% Australian-owned and operated, and will give you higher quality and better prices guaranteed. So visit bulknutrients.com.au. It's your one-stop shop.
Welcome back to Aussie Muscle Radio. I'm joined once again by Matt Legg for 2 minutes with a scientist. He's ATP's chief head scientist. Matt, today we're going to talk about how much protein to use to actually be effective and I suppose, you know, cause protein synthesis. So this is kind of an interesting topic. You're telling me about a study you recently saw on this.
Yeah. So because this is something, yeah, everyone wants to know. We've always got that mentality, you know, where more is better. But in regards to protein, we can absorb plenty. You know, they always used to talk about we can only absorb a certain amount, but they're finding out we can absorb a lot of it, but it's what happens to it from there. So a certain percentage of the protein we want to just go to protein synthesis. Any more than that, and it gets converted to something else. So typically it'll be converted to either through gluconeogenesis, make sugar, or it'll basically go down and make urea. And there's a lot of talk at the moment about, you know, kidney damage, and a lot of people talking about, you know, weird stuff happening on blood tests showing up their kidneys. I'm always getting hit up by people wanting to know how to fix their kidneys. But a lot of the problems can come from having too much protein. This recent study that I was reading basically showed that the ideal amount used was about 10 grams of protein per 40 kilos of body weight. So if you're 80 kilos, you're looking at about 20 grams of protein per serve. Now, the thing I liked about this study is it was actually done with athletes as opposed to just your average Joe, and it was done post-workout. So they were trying to work out exactly what is the right amount of protein to supply post-workout to enhance muscle growth and protein synthesis. What they found is any less than that, and they didn't get the maximum protein synthesis, and any more than that, and they're getting conversion through to glucose or urea and adding burdens onto the kidney and that sort of thing.
Yeah, for sure.
So, and that's not like, I'm not talking about a daily amount, that's just per serve. So if you're sitting at 80 kilos, then you're looking at about 20 grams of protein per serve to be supplied in a post-workout or in a supplement show.
Yep. Now, do you believe, I mean, if you were recommending someone, how much would you recommend someone have post-workout? Would this reflect basically your recommendations?
Yeah, pretty close. But I usually go and then load her up with branch chains as well. So I'm always thinking we supply about 20 grams of protein from a WPI or a hydrolyzed whey or a concentrate. Just depends how it's more to do with sensitivity in the gut, which one of those we choose often. And they provide 20 grams of that, and then I usually spike it up with a good, you know, 10 grams of branch chains and another 5 grams of glutamine and that sort of thing as well. Because we are looking at doing a little bit extra than just maintaining, so.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, what type of, obviously, protein would you recommend post-workout? What would be your recommendation? Would it be something like a hydrolyzed whey, or would it be just a whey protein isolate?
So with a post-workout, what we want to do is it's all about hitting that window where we want to shuttle the aminos into the area as fast as possible. So in that case, I'm looking for a WPI or a hydrolyzed whey. Other times of the day when you're using your protein just to maintain your macros, that's when I actually look at the slower absorption ones as a better option. The faster the proteins they're absorbed, they're going to be utilized faster. So post-workout is a good time to put in a fast one. But around the rest of the time, the faster it's absorbed, the more conversion that's going to happen. So you're actually, when you're using it in within a meal, having a combination that even has some concentrate in it's no problem, and other things that may slow down the absorption of the protein, such as, you know, combining with fat and fiber and that sort of thing.
Yeah, for sure. Do you think there's any risk in terms of having, you know, a really quick releasing protein like a hydrolyzed or a whey protein isolate if you're having a fat source during the day, so you're not spiking insulin and having a fat source?
Yeah, that can be a problem. Not around training, it's no problem. But if you're using it, you know, as meals away from training, then yeah, then what's actually going to happen is the insulin spike will basically send a message to the body saying there's plenty of carbs here to burn. You know, they take priority. So that fat doesn't necessarily get utilized the way it would.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So would you suggest maybe having fat source and maybe some fiber or something before you have the whey protein isolate shake or the hydrolyzed shake?
Yeah, it's not a bad idea, but you still want to balance out your macros and your meal.
Yep.
It's just basically, it all depends on the type of fat, you know? So basically if the fat that you're providing is, you know, like omega-3 oils to be incorporated into membrane structures such as omega-3s, if it's medium chain triglycerides that are effectively burnt from, you know, the ones from coconut oil and that sort of stuff.
Yep.
But if it's some hydrogenated trans fatty stuff that's just going to clog arteries, well, that's the stuff that when you combine it with the insulin spike, it's actually really bad for you.
Yeah.
Yep.
Oh, excellent. Awesome, Matt. Is there anything else you want to add on that, or are we going to wrap it up?
No, that's right. The biggest thing with the products that are on the market is actually the flavor. So you'll see that the companies will justify their use of their particular protein source with a whole heap of science, but at the end of the day, they'll often make a product that they know is going to sell, and they'll try to use the protein that's actually going to taste the best and it's most economically viable. That's why, you know, if you and I, to make the ideal protein for us, we'd put a heap of hydrolyzed whey and a heap of WPI and maybe only a small amount of concentrate, if any, you know, but that would taste bad and be really expensive.
Yeah, exactly.
So, a lot of the products on the market, they make out a blend, so it's good. So people just keep coming back and buying it over and over again. Yeah. Some of the proteins I make in the lab are absolutely disgusting, especially some of the high levels of hydrolyzed whey. Because hydrolyzed whey is almost savory to taste. So it's actually pretty horrible. Like hydrolyzed proteins, what you find in soy sauces and Vegemites and all that sort of stuff.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's a flavor enhancer for savory sort of stuff.
So, that's interesting. Yeah, I actually, like post-workout especially, I actually enjoy the taste of hydrolyzed, which is quite strange. Yeah. Like I've tried different versions of hydrolyzed and how hydrolyzed proteins are and stuff. I've tried a really, really hydrolyzed protein and I actually quite liked it. And combining that with WPI, you know, half and half.
Yep.
I actually enjoy the taste of it. It's like almost refreshing because I don't know if it's because it gets in there so quick or what it is. But
yeah. And it froths up like crazy.
Yeah, yeah.
Give it a shake and you got a whole thing of froth. We've been making a post-workout. We've been experimenting with a post-workout for the last 12 months with our ATP athletes. And, it's got a massive dose of all these proteins in it. And, it smells beautiful in the tub. The flavor's nice, but it's just horrible. but I try to jam too much stuff in it. You know, once we work out the thing works, then we'll work out how to make it taste good if we want to. But when things work well enough, you know, you don't care. Or you feel good, you know, you feel good. And things always taste different when your body wants it. For example, if your body's craving those amino acids, they get absorbed so quickly, they spend less time on your tongue. Something can taste so different when you are exhausted to what it would taste like, when you're not exhausted, you know?
Yeah.
So if your body's low in sugar and salt and aminos, those things get absorbed so quickly, they spend less time on your tongue, you get less flavor out of them.
Yeah. And you crave them more as well, I find, so.
Yeah, yeah, that's right.
But, Matt, I want to thank you once again for coming on Aussie Muscle Radio and sharing your wisdom with all our listeners. That's Matt Legg, ATP's chief scientist. We'll be back in a few minutes with the show wrap up with Michael Galley.
Mass Nutrition is Australia's premier sports supplement provider, with over 13 stores Australia-wide, stocking everything from protein powders and pre-workout mixes to weightlifting accessories and gym apparel. Mass Nutrition covers all your fitness needs. Owned and operated independently by Australia's best bodybuilders, you know you're not only getting the best brands at the best prices, but you're getting truly expert advice as well. Fuel your fire at one of our Mass Nutrition retail outlets or shop online at massnutrition.com.au.
Here's to the athlete, the bodybuilder, the figure competitor, those who are committed, those who sacrifice, those who want to be different, the ones that get up an hour before they have to, that put their body on the line for their goals and are never, ever satisfied with close enough. You can ridicule them, but you can never ignore them, because they challenge the way people make you think about themselves. And while the masses try to confine them and dismiss them, at ATP we celebrate their achievements, their dedication, and why they improve the world. Visit us on Facebook or at www.atpscience.com.
My Muscle Chef is the perfect solution for anyone who doesn't want to spend hours cooking, cleaning, and doing groceries every week. You can now focus on your training knowing your diet is taken care of. All you need to do is microwave and eat. To order, simply jump online at MyMuscleChef.com or call 1-300-364-993.
Editor-in-Chief of RX Muscle Australia, Xavier Wills, is an amateur bodybuilder who's won state titles and competed on the national level. He's been competing since the age of 16 and wants to bring his knowledge to you. Xavier offers full off-season and contest preparation plans at affordable prices to get you shredded and ready to hit the stage without sacrificing that hard-earned muscle. Xavier keeps in constant contact with his clients and offers text message support, weekly Skype or phone calls, and personalized assessments to keep you on track and get the results you desire. You can contact Xavier Wills on his official Facebook page by searching for his name. You can also find Xavier on rxmuscle.com.au, or you can send him an email at xavierwills@rxmuscle.com.au. Get in shape now. Contact Xavier Wills today.
Leave that edge in your training to push past barriers, break PBs, and take the body you've been working so hard for to the next level? Well, look no further. Gripped Fitness, the brand that supports the industry and Australia's top athletes. Gripped has a complete range of lifting accessories and apparel designed to get you lifting more, while providing the needed support and aesthetics to take your body to the next level. Check them out at www.gripped.com.au. Get a grip.
Welcome back to Aussie Muscle Radio. I'm joined by Michael Galley, and he is on location in Thailand for the first ever episode of Aussie Muscle Radio, with half of it recorded from Thailand.
I like that, on location.
Yeah, yeah. How's it all been, mate? I mean, it's been, obviously, you've been there for how long now? What, about a week? Almost?
Today is actually a week. It feels like I've been here a month, because we've had that much. Well, we went to Patong first, because I still had to do more legal work and get my work for visa and all that sort of stuff.
I saw that photo. You're looking very very suave in that photo.
Oh, thank you very much. Yes. So that was all that was all taken care of and stuff. And we had a few days spare before we came over here. So me and Laura just did all the touristy stuff. You know, the tigers and shooting and PP Island, all those sort of things. And then we got here 2 days ago on Koh Samui. Shop to me looks a little bit behind, but I've been assured that everything's on schedule and they will have it open on the 1st. I don't think so, but anyway. but the shop is going to save. I can't wait to put photos up when it's all done. Like, this shop's going to look absolutely sick. And when you're out here where we are, like the gym, the shop's right next to Elite Gym and Fitness, which is an insane gym. It's about 5, 6, 7 minutes out of town, and we're on like a back street, so, and the shop's right next door to it. So if you came out here, it's just weird to see some kick-ass gym and then there's going to be an awesome supplement shop in the almost in the middle of nowhere. But the times we've gone past the gym in peak hours, it's absolutely pumping. So yeah, it's going to be a good setup. We had dinner with the owners at the gym last night, and we just went for everything we're going to do, cross promotions with them and stuff. So Yeah, everything's going well, mate. Except, oh, did you see that little moped accident I had?
I saw you came off a moped. I actually spoke to Scotty yesterday when we recorded our bit, and I said, yeah, Mick's already come off his moped, so we're going to talk a bit about that later on in the show. So, yeah. How did that happen?
Do you want the truth?
Yes, I want the truth.
Okay, well, now everyone don't do this at home because it's very acceptable over here in Thailand. But Laura and I went out for dinner one night, and Long Island iced teas over here, Xavier, they're like 100 baht, which is $3, okay? So anyone who knows me knows I love a good cocktail. So after quite a few cocktails, Laura and I were quite pissed, and I've walked out to get on the moped, and she's like, I'm not getting on that moped with you, and which was a good call. So she's jumped in a tuk-tuk, and I'm driving behind her and being an idiot. And to be honest with you, I don't really remember coming off, but... Jesus. I'm alive and well, and all I can say is I'm glad I was wearing a helmet. Now, Laura's just about to go for a run in this stinking hot heat here, and she's just shaking her head as I'm talking. Laura, do you want to add anything to that conversation? She's got no comment. She was disgusted, apparently. Like, she was in tears. Like, she didn't know what was going on. So I promised to not do that again.
Is it just the leg that got a little bit cut up?
It was the calf, the forearm, the tricep, the collarbone, even now, the collarbone. I haven't trained since then. I'll tell you now, thank God I was wearing a helmet, because I don't remember much, but I do remember hitting that road quite hard.
Jesus. So how fast were you going?
I have no idea. Hey, Laura, how fast was it going?
Pretty quick,
apparently. Yeah.
Oh, dear.
So, anyway, we're all good.
Yeah. But it sounds like it's been entertaining at least. So hopefully each week you'll probably have a little story. Hopefully it's not coming off a moped though every time.
Let's not do that again. I'm sure we'll have a couple of good little stories to tell from time. Well, just the characters alone from this gym, I can tell there's going to be funny stories to tell. And they've actually got show me photos of this guy last night, and he's off season, but he's lean as hell. His name's Marius. Now these boys are from Sweden. He's a pro. Just got his pro card. He's coming over to train here in the next couple of weeks. Xavier, he's 159 centimetres at 110 kilos. Oh, and the photos were shocking. I mean, I looked at him going, what the fuck? See, a lot of these guys we don't hear about from Sweden and all those places, he was packing some serious muscle. So hopefully I'll be able to get some good shots of him too in the gym, and we can put him up on the on our Facebook page.
Yeah, definitely. That's exciting. Awesome. I can't wait to hear some of those stories. And Mick, I feel like... yeah, like, you've had a few stories on the radio show now where you've had like, you know, close shaves with serious injury or death. Like, you've got the lift incident, you've got that incident. Have you been others?
Man, where do you want me to start? Like, Xavier, I've come, some good biggest ones, but,
anyway, we had the Arnold Classic Brazil on over the weekend, and, I mean, Scotty and I obviously touched on it earlier in the show, and we talked about it. But that was a very interesting show, and we had, you know, a lot of stories coming out with Steve Kuklo obviously winning, which was, I mean, I don't think any, I haven't heard one person on Facebook anywhere say they agreed with that decision, not one person that was actually there that agreed with it, apart from obviously the judges, or a lot of the judges must have thought that. And we had Ben Pekulski, who was set to compete there, but he'd never showed up. So I don't know what happened there, if it was a visa issue or what it was. But yeah, it was an interesting show. I mean, Mick, what do you think about it? Obviously, your boy Lionel Blakey, who you're quite a fan of, comes in fourth, and the consensus was that he perhaps should have won.
Lionel should have won. It was hands down. And you know, the other good thing I was touching on with the boys that are here, there's a guy named Nico and Sebastian that own the gym. They're both well-known competitors in where they're from in Sweden. So it's great to, because they, you know, they're all in the bodybuilding news too. And at dinner, we talked about this comp as well. Mate, no one had Steve winning. These guys didn't have Steve winning. Every forum I've seen on the internet, no one had Steve winning. So how can every single person get that result wrong except those judges? I thought Lionel was a clear winner. I had Steve third or fourth.
Yeah, I had him like fourth or even fifth maybe. I could have justified Steve coming as high as second at a push, and that'd be a very lucky placing in my opinion, a second, but... it just seemed very strange.
It's baffling, mate. And this happened the year before, where Steve got a very controversial win again. But for someone like Lionel, now I know Dennis James preps him, and always your prep coach is going to be biased in a way or whatever. But Dennis makes a really good argument here. And last night he put up on his Facebook page a comparison picture, and they were very good comparison pictures of every single pose. Steve didn't beat Lionel in one pose, in my mind, and everyone else agrees. There was, if you jump on there, Xavier, and have a look, like
I saw it. I saw it today.
No one disputed that Lionel should have won.
Yeah, yeah.
Is this to you? Is this one of the most controversial wins you've ever seen in your time in bodybuilding?
Well, I reckon this, and probably Jay Cutler's win in 2007, I think it was.
Oh yeah, when he beat Victor.
Yeah, I reckon they're the two most controversial ones I've seen. Even the Steve one last year, that was quite controversial. So
exactly, yeah. So now he's had two controversial wins, and you've got to. The question with Steve is this going to have any effect on him mentally as well, thinking, you know, I've won, but no one thinks I've won? You know, like, how does that affect him?
Yeah, I mean, obviously he wins the money and wins the title, and that's great, but I'm sure he's thinking, like, he hasn't won almost, because he copped this all last year, and he's copying it again now.
Yeah, I'd be the same, mate. If you win a comp, you want everyone to come up to you and congratulate you, say, you know, clear winner. You want to read the forums and go, you know, Steve blitz the competition, unreal physique. And instead, and he might say, you know, I don't read that crap. Everyone reads the forums. He'll be looking at it all. That would play on my mind massively. Like, that'd be tough to deal with.
Definitely. And he's obviously doing that Europa show as well, the Europa Dallas, which he did win last year against ESA. And he's going to be up against Lionel again. So it's going to be interesting to see kind of what happens there. And I'm sure it's kind of almost put a little bit of doubt in his mind.
Yeah, that's going to be a tough one. And I mean, I suppose the same thing goes for Lionel too. Lionel's done everything he could, get shafted in a fourth. So how mentally, what does this do to him going to Europa?
Yeah, exactly. So yeah. Hopefully Lionel can bounce back. I actually spoke to Lionel on Facebook the other day, and I said, you know, I thought you should have won and all that stuff. And he seemed in good spirits. He's talking back to me and saying, oh, thank you, bro. And, you know, and then I kind of mentioned you should come out to Australia. And he was like, oh, yes. You know, he sounded real keen for it for the Arnold Classic Australia. So hopefully he does that.
Yeah, that'd be. Hey, how cool were the pictures seeing of Tony Doherty and that Narnal?
Yeah, I know, that's awesome. Yeah. He's ushering him through the expo and stuff, and obviously he was the MC awesome. As well, so he did a great job from everything I've heard.
Yeah, that's awesome, mate. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, how do you think Justin Compton would have won?
He would have won it.
Yeah, that's what I thought too.
Definitely. Yep. But yeah, I mean, Mick, have you heard anything on what happened with Ben Pakulski? Because he was, you know, set to compete. Doesn't show up, doesn't compete. Did you hear what the cause was?
No, I mean, I haven't heard a thing. Haven't seen anything on Facebook, nothing on any forums. I've got no idea what happened to him.
It's strange that I haven't heard anyone even mention it as well. It's just like people almost forgot. I mean, it's kind of, you know, based off his placing and how he did at the Arnold in Columbus, he wasn't a factor in that top five. So it's almost like people have forgotten about him doing this show because, you know, all the talk was about, you know, William Bonac, and was about Steve Kuklo, and was about Lionel Baiki and all those guys coming in and compete. But no one mentioned Ben much, so he's almost forgotten. And, I mean, it's almost an insult to him that, you know, he was set to compete in this show. He doesn't show up and no one mentions it.
No one mentions it. No, that's not good at all. But anyway, hey, fucking Tony Freeman looked good, didn't he?
He did. I mean, his legs aren't, you know, they're not getting any bigger or anything like that, but he did come in condition and, you know, he deserved, you know, whether he deserved fifth or not, I don't know. He deserved to be up in that top kind of six or seven guys, definitely. I mean, I spoke to, when I recorded with Scott before the show, I said, does Tony Freeman have a chance of a top five in this lineup? Scott said, no chance.
I would have been thinking the same, yeah.
Yeah, and I agreed. I said, yeah, I don't think he's going to be there. I mean, he's on a downward spiral, but he did obviously bring condition, and, you know, whether he can win another pro show or anything like that at this point, I mean, you know, if he picks the right lineup, possibly, but I think he can still punch his ticket back to the Olympia and do a lot of these smaller shows and place top five and get enough points at least anyway.
Yeah, I agree with that, mate. I definitely still think he can place, you know, top two, three, four in all the smaller shows, definitely get the points that he needs, and I think we'll see him at the Olympia.
Yeah. Do you have any, before we move on and start talking about some other stuff, do you have any kind of closing thoughts on the Arnold Brazil?
Lionel should have won.
Yeah.
That's all. I'm still just, I don't know. You know, they always say you have to be there in real life, blah, blah, blah. But how many people have we seen said they were there in real life and Lionel should have won?
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, You can see it from the pictures as well. Steve doesn't have that real dense, hard, crazy-looking muscle. But, I mean, not too many people actually really had it in that top four and five. But Lionel was really filling out his physique. And, you know, I think he appeared harder than Steve even. And it just doesn't make sense that he would be in fourth when he's got so much more muscle. I think he's got better shape and all that kind of stuff. And it's just, it's confusing. But I think Juan Morel was probably the hardest in that top four. And then maybe John De La Rosa, then maybe Lionel, and then Steve. But, you know, Juan doesn't have the muscle that Lionel has. And so it's just, it's confusing. It's confusing.
Yeah, very, very. Anyway, hopefully the next comp, everything's sorted.
Exactly. But I actually spoke to Mike O'Mara yesterday, who's, he's the, I suppose, the IFB president of, he's the president of the IFB in WA here. And he, you know, he gave me a call to check in with things and all that kind of stuff. And he rang initially to see if I was doing the Worlds in November or December or whenever it is. And I mean, it's hard to turn down, but I think I'd be too burnt out by then. But I kind of went on to ask him about the Arnold Australia and how all that's going. And I said, because obviously they have the qualifying this year. You have to compete in an IFBB Australia show before the Arnold Classic Australia to qualify. So I asked him, I said, is the O'Mara Classic in March going to be on before that? And he said, yeah, it's going to be 1 week before so people can qualify. And he said, he basically said, so people can do their state shows and all that and then qualify for the Arnold Australia. So it's kind of, I didn't even think to ask at the time, but it made me wonder if there's going to be more state shows actually before, you know, if they're going to maybe have, I don't know about a VIX, but maybe like a Queensland show or, you know, some other state shows and stuff, or maybe a South Australian show before the Arnold Australia, because people obviously have to qualify and perhaps, you know, there'll be more people from, you know, South, if there isn't a South Australian one, there'll be people flying over from there to come and compete in WA and qualify, or if people are going to be doing the Australasians to qualify. So that's kind of, it's good that they're having those comps now before the actual Arnold Australia, because otherwise people would have to be forced to do October and then, you know, almost continue dieting and stuff. And that's what I was thinking, you know, but I'd have to do if I wanted to compete in there. So I'm very glad. And I'm sure a lot of competitors out there hearing this news would be very glad that they can qualify a week before just by competing and they can already book their tickets to the Arnold Australia.
Yeah. Where's the Australasian situated? Is that after the Arnold?
I believe it's going to be a week before as well. I think it's going to be a week. Okay. That's at a guess. I mean, Mike didn't, I don't want to say it if on, you know, on record or anything like that, but I'm guessing that will also be before the Arnold as well. If not, maybe I'll do a state show as well. I don't know. But I'm guessing the Australasians and the Omara will be a week before.
Yeah, well, that's great news for Mike. I mean, as you know, coming over watching you compete there, Mike runs a great show, great auditorium, looks after everyone, massive backstage. So I could see myself being over there with you, I think.
Yeah, definitely. It's good. He's actually he's booked it in for October, and he's also booked it in for that March already. So he's got the venue locked away, that same venue locked away for the next two Omara Classics. So that's a credit to Mike. He said it's all paid for already. So I'm like, geez, that's good. getting in the head. Yeah. So Mike's obviously doing well there, and he's doing all he could to convince me to do the Worlds because he loves sending people over there and, you know, having a good team and stuff. But I mean, as far as I know, I'd be the only one going over to the classic men's world, so I'm not too keen on that. But, I just actually, Mick, before we get into the 93 Mr. Olympia, which we're going to talk a little bit about, I just wanted to insert a little clip of Dave Palumbo and Chris Aceto talking about the Arnold Classic, just kind of stepping back a little bit, because people were going to say, oh, you know, you looked at pictures or whatever, but I want to hear, want people to listen to, you know, obviously two industry experts talking about the Arnold Classic. So here's what Dave and Chris had to say about the Arnold Classic Brazil. Okay, so I'll just insert that there.
Okay. Insert music now.
let's see, I'll just write it down what time it was.
Yep. Yeah, they were both obviously heavily opposed to Steve winning, weren't they?
Yep. Insert. Audio. Cool. All right. 3, 2, 1. So obviously, yeah, Dave and Chris were quite, you know, conclusive in saying that Steve shouldn't have won it. And I mean, that was the consensus over all the bodybuilding media as well, not just RX Muscle. Obviously, Chris Aceto had John De La Rosa in the show, who looked, you know, really, really good there. But it just seems like a very strange decision. Maybe for someone on the judging panel, maybe it was so close in their eyes that, you know, someone on the judging panel said this person, and I mean Steve Kuklow, and then maybe the other person thought, yeah, they could make a case for him. So I don't know. It just seems strange.
It's a tough call, and I mean, everyone had Lionel first, so I still don't understand how he would have got fourth. Like, wouldn't they have just, if it was that close, or in their judges' minds, if they're thinking, fuck, this is a bit close for us, just put him first and second, but how does he go to fourth?
Yeah, it doesn't make sense.
It's strange, isn't it? Anyway, I feel sorry for him, but hopefully he'll bounce back.
Yeah, exactly. And I think when you do kind of get a raw deal at a comp, you almost get more exposure and more credit. So when you're getting more exposure, I mean, obviously that's not a bad thing. So, obviously he takes a hit in the pocket because he would have won $35,000 if he won that comp. And I think second place was 20 grand. And then I'm not sure what it was from there, but I imagine it went down substantially after that. So, you know, maybe it was a 25 grand or 30 grand less money. So that's got to be kind of a bit of a hit. Because obviously the US dollar as well over there. If you got 35 grand in US, it's a bit different to 35 grand in Australia too. So, yeah.
All good.
Let's talk about the 1993 Mr. Olympia. We're doing our greatest Olympias of all time. This was a big one. I mean, you look at the top five and it's just, or top six even, and it's just pure quality of big names that you hear, you know, thrown around still these days. So we obviously had Dorian Yates winning his second Mr. Olympia. And I think this was Lou Ferrigno's last ever Mr. Olympia, where he made his comeback and placed in 10th place, which is pretty impressive because the lineup was over 20 competitors. So, Mick, what was your kind of overall feel for this Mr. Olympia? Dorian Yates wins it, Flex Wheeler second, Sean Ray in third.
Man, I still remember this like it was yesterday too. This was a huge Olympia. This is when Dorian Yates, he won the year before, and came in extremely sharp, had a whole year off, and this was the breakthrough year. This was the year that everyone talks about, changed the way bodybuilding looked. He was humongous, and he was hard all over. Pretty much just dominated the show from the get-go. Flex Wheeler, this was his rookie year as well. You know, remember, Flex had won the first four pro shows of the start of the year, including the Arnold Classic. Coming into this show, everyone, you know, was probably pipping, you know, Flex could win this. No one had seen how Dorian looked. Sean Ray, again, another front runner. I believe this may have been his best conditioning to date in any Olympia. It was a pretty hot contested show, mate.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, obviously the top five, you know, you had Kevin Lavroni down in fifth. What Olympia was this for Kevin? I mean, I can't imagine you'd done a lot before this.
This was Kevin's, 92 was his first Olympia, where he burst on the scene, he got second place.
Yep.
Now, this was the year that he tore his pec at the start of 93, if you remember that.
No, I don't remember that, I was 4 years old.
Oh, okay. Yeah, but you know about it, don't you?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, sorry. Anyway, so he tore his pec at the start of the year. Now, everyone knows Kevin's a huge bencher, benches 5-6 plates a side, loves it. Tore his pec, everyone presumed he was the out of Olympia. Like, no one gave him a chance in hell. He's obviously, I mean, fifth was a bad placing for Kevin, but to come back from a torn pec, and he did look quite good. He was a lot bigger than normal, a little bit smoother, but to land in fifth place and showing no signs of a pec tear was awesome. And he went on the year after to win the 94 Arnold Classic in the most insane condition he'd brought yet. So, it was another, you know, it was just good to see Kevin come back and had no lasting sort of effects from that pec tear.
And Lee Labrada comes in fourth, so this was kind of... I mean, Lee Labrada, he didn't compete for ages after this, but... how many Olympias did Lee Labrada do after this? I can't imagine it was a lot.
This was his last Olympia. His first one was 87, and he was consistent in all the Olympias. Got to 93, and for the first time in his career, he decided to take a bit of time off. So he took all the 94 off, came back in 95, he did the Arnold Classic, came in fifth. And I remember right then and there, that's when he retired, and that's when he decided it was... This is when all the big boys were coming through. Nessa, Mike Francois, Kevin Labrone was huge at that time. This is when all those boys were placing, and I think that's when he said, you know what, my time's done. And he retired after a fifth place at the Arnold Classic.
Yeah. Now, looking down the lineup a little bit, we had Paul Dillette in sixth. Paul Dillette was one of those guys where... people either seem to kind of like love him or hate him because he was so enormous, and some people would say, oh, well, he's almost like the Marcus Rule of back then. just in terms of how much muscle we had. Perhaps we're in a bit better shape, though. What did you think of Paul Dillette, you know, comparing him to the top guys in the Olympia? Because everyone liked to make the comparison of how big he was compared to the actual Mr. Olympia.
Paul was huge. Like, he was, and he had a tiny waist, mate. Like, it was a really, really thin waist. Maybe a little bit bloated in the years after that, but it was still very, very tight. He was probably a little bit off, but to land sixth in a first Olympia back then was a huge accomplishment. And he actually came out to Australia a couple of weeks. It might have been 2 or 3 weeks after this to guest post. And I got to meet him in Sydney when I did the Junior Australia. And all I remember was, because you used to come up to him and they'd have signed photos and stuff like that. All I remember with Paul was he was just sitting there eating a million cheeseburgers, it looked like. It was just, yeah.
Wasn't that one of those situations where you went back and told everyone to eat cheeseburgers and that was the secret?
No, I didn't do that. That was a cherry ripe one with Dorian Yates. No.
You kind of learn after the cherry ripe thing.
Yeah, I thought this is just stupid. This cherry ripe's not going to do nothing. So, yeah, no, I was not going to go back and tell everyone, fuck, we've got to eat cheeseburgers.
So funny.
I was already eating a heap of cheeseburgers by then. It wasn't doing anything to me except making me fat.
Now, Charles Claremont comes in seventh. What do you think of Charles? Obviously, he's kind of one of his really underrated guys, in my opinion.
He had a great physique. He was from England, and there was a lot of talk about him before he got his pro card. He finally got it. Excellent arms, legs, back, shoulders, things like that. Never quite nailed his condition 100%, but obviously this was his first Olympia, I'm pretty sure he did. So seventh was a quite a good start. He did win a couple of smaller pro shows, like the English Grand Prix. I think he might have won the Niagara Falls in that as well. So he did all right. He hung around for a few years. He was always consistent where he placed in the Olympia, like 7th, 8th, 9th, like that, and then he finally dropped out of the top 10. But, yeah, great physique.
Yeah, I was actually looking, like, when you look at the competitors list that I mean, the results that I downloaded, it's got all the flags of the nationality. And for his, I was like, what flag is that? It just looks very unusual. And it's actually a Barbados flag, so perhaps he's originally from there.
Yeah, I keep forgetting. I just keep thinking he's Pommy because he spends so much time in England.
Yeah. And it's a weird-looking flag. I've never seen it before in my life. So. Yeah. But Sonny Smith, the Australian, comes in eighth here. We actually talked about last week where he placed, you know, like sixth and then went seventh and then went eighth. I mean, Sonny seemed really consistent at an Olympia level.
Yeah, agree. Yeah, like we said, his first Olympia in 91, sixth, then he went to seventh, then he went to eighth. I'm not sure where he dropped. Now, after this Olympia, he went to the Masters Olympia in 94, didn't he? He won that. So he had quite a good, quite a few good placings in the Open Mr. Olympia. Yeah, again, I'm just trying to remember this one here. He definitely came in good shape again.
Yeah, for sure. Andreas Munzer in ninth, obviously known for his conditioning. Didn't have enough size to match it with the top guys, but, I mean, what did you think of Andreas in this Olympia?
Yeah, same thing. His trademark is conditioning. He had cross-durations in his quads. His triceps were insane. The cuts were so deep in his tricep. It was nuts. Like, I still haven't seen anything to this day, like the hardness of a guy like that, which he ultimately paid the price for with his death, which was only a few years after this. But, yeah, I mean, Andreas placed... He always used to place quite well in the Olympia, around that 8th, 9th, 10th, around that mark there. Didn't have the best sort of structure, but his conditioning was the one thing where he just walked out, and once he posed, everyone was just in shock.
Yeah, definitely. Lou Ferrigno in 10th. What did you think of Lou's comeback? How did you think he kind of stacked up, and do you think he kind of got the placing he deserved?
Lou's comeback was hyped up immensely, what I remember. And remember, we didn't have internet back there and stuff, so we had to wait for the magazines to come out. And every magazine, there'd be a cover of Lou or articles of Lou in there. Or you'd hear on the grapevine from people that have been over in California, Lou's massive. And Lou was. There was a picture I saw of Lou and Paul Dillette standing next to each other, just in their training tops in the gym. But Lou Ferrigno shadowed Paul Dillette, which gives you an indication how big Lou really is. Now, he got on stage, I think, at 310 or 320 pounds, which was unheard of. I think just with Lou, little things like his legs still lacked, the hardness still wasn't there, and just the overall shape and structure. The guys that he was competing against then were vastly superior in that way. But to make a comeback the way he did after so much time off stage was incredible. He really did look good, mate.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, and I was very impressed with him. Miloš Sačev in 11th here. Obviously, he did. Milos did so many shows and was so consistent. He looked good again. JJ Marsh, we talked about him last week. He was in 12th. The 13th place finisher kind of intrigues me a bit, and it kind of makes me wonder why he was 13th. There's always shots of Lou standing next to him, and it's Flavio.
Yeah.
Oh, what's his last name? Baccanini? I don't know.
Let's go with that.
But he is the shortest dude, and I was kind of like looked at him in that show. Like when I first got into bodybuilding ages ago, I thought, okay, this guy, this isn't an Olympia. This must be a show after it or something, because I didn't know how a guy this short could qualify for Olympia, and he looked, you know, quite small and whatnot. He places 13th ahead of about 10 guys in the Olympia. Was this just because he was standing next to Lou and there's like that comparison there?
Mate, I can't remember his height. Like, he was short, like, extremely short, but he packed some serious muscle on that frame. Like, and the conditioning was there as well. I mean, he did a couple of shows where he placed rather high in some smaller European shows, but man, he did pack some muscle though.
Yeah, he did for his height, but he was very short. Like,
yeah, I'm thinking maybe 4. I think it was 4'10" or 5 foot.
Yeah, very, very short. Like, yeah. You look at photos of him next to Lou, and it looks just like a child, Lou with was a huge amount of muscle.
Did you see the photo where Lou's patting him on his head?
Yeah. That's the one I remember.
Oh dear.
Yeah, it's hilarious. But Ron Love in 14th. What do you think of Ron's physique?
Always a fan of Ron. He was quite good in the mid to late 80s. He won numerous pro shows, Ron. Placed fairly high in quite a few Olympias, 7th and 8th. He was a copper back then, and extremely wide shoulders, little waist. Didn't really have any glaring weak points. He was just one of those naturally gifted bodybuilders that sort of had everything.
Yeah, for sure. In 15th, Ray McNeil. I checked out this guy before we recorded the radio show. I really like his physique.
Do you know the story behind Ray McNeil? How he died?
No.
Oh, here we go. Mate, Ray McNeil, I liked Ray's physique too. He won a couple of pro shows. Could have had a really, really good career. It was a different physique. It was really pointy biceps. Came in extreme conditioning. Now, he was dating a former fellow pro, Sally McNeil. And by all reports, it was a very, very violent relationship. And same thing back in our day, we like I said, no internet, so we'd hear things on the grapevine. And Roy Rose, who used to MC quite a few of the comps, used to work at Archer's gym where I was at, so he'd get all the information, you know, via the phone and stuff like this. Now apparently they had a huge argument, and this was on the police report too. But she had a shotgun and she fired it in their kitchen behind Ray, and obviously shot him in the stomach and blew Ellie's stomach out from the front. Then she fired another one. And blew half his jaw off. Now, on the police report, when the police turn up, they still say Ray was just alive and was still trying to speak with half a jaw before he passed away.
Oh, Jesus.
We all heard that. And she's still in jail now. And this is, I think this happened in 94 or 95. So this is almost 20 years ago. She's still in jail. But yeah, it was pretty shocking news at the time because Ray was quite a well-known competitor. And to hear how it actually happened and how, like, that's pretty full on to hear something like that. But yeah, everyone was pretty shocked about it. That was that really followed bodybuilding.
Had Ray been competing long at this time? Like, was he a pro for long? Or
I know he won the Canadian Nationals to get his pro card, which probably was 92 or 91. I think he'd come on the scene around 89, if I remember.
Yeah.
Winning some of the I do remember him as a junior North American champion or something like that as well. So, yeah, he definitely was one of those guys that, you know, everyone could see the potential in him. And he had a different look to his physique. So, you know, it's hard to say where someone would have ended up, but I think he would have had a pretty good career, you know, had that not have happened.
Yeah, he could have been one of those guys that, you know, you never know. We could have been talking about him as a top 10 type guy in the Olympia. And then, you know, judging by the way his physique looked, I think that could have been a definite possibility. But obviously that wasn't to happen. But Mick, a few more guys in the lineup, guys I've never heard of before. I want to kind of test you to see if, like, the other week you did very well. I think it was last week, actually, at naming some of these guys. Now, in 16th place, Mauro Sani.
He actually, 93, he won his first pro show, got his pro card, believe it or not, won a pro show in 93 with extreme conditioning. He, there was no outstanding body parts for him. I just remember he was a really good-looking Italian guy. Dark hair, dark skin, nice muscle bellies. But after this comp, he pretty much went nowhere. He was one of those just flash-in-the-pan sort of guys.
Yeah, yeah. I'm surprised you got one. Next one, Hamdullah Akutlu.
I reckon if you saw some more photos of this guy, you might remember him. He wasn't big at all. He probably weighed maybe 180, something like that, but so shredded, like so shredded. His glutes and hammies were nuts because he won the World Amateur Championships and everyone was freaking out with his condition. Never went any good as a pro. He tried for a few years but just couldn't put the mass on. But funny enough, he made a comeback the last year or the start of this year. You know, we're talking 20 years ago. Made a comeback. Grey hair and all that works there, but the physique is so similar to what he had 20 years ago. The conditioning, still the glutes, everything was there. He still looked insane.
Did he? So you said he made a comeback. Was this as a pro?
No. He obviously gave his pro card away, and he's just. I'm not sure which country he's in, but obviously it's just his hometown. I'm not sure which comps they were. Someone had just put a photo up on the forum saying, "Oh, have a look how good he looks now." You know, 20 years later.
Huh. I'll have to have a look for that. That's interesting. But yeah, yeah. In 18th, or equal last, I guess, Arthur Burman. You heard of him?
You got me on that one, to be honest with you. I can't remember that guy's name for the life of me. I got a feeling this was Arthur's only comp.
His only comp was in Olympia.
I've got a feeling he's qualified for the Olympia. He's done it, and he's going, you know what? I've done the Olympia. I'll tell my grandkids.
Yep. Okay, next one. Another one I never heard of. Pavel Grolmus.
No, we spoke about Pavel last week when we were talking. Yeah, when we went over the what Olympia did we discuss? The 91. I'm pretty sure Pavel was in that one as well. Known for his arms, he won the World Amateur Championships again.
Someone else? Isn't that a different name? Slightly different.
Oh, geez, don't tell me I'm stumped. You could be right.
We're talking about Pavlo, isn't it?
No, I know you're talking about Pavel. Gravelopsy or whatever.
Yeah. This is a different one.
Yeah, no. I know. This one now I can think of. Yeah, definitely. Thicker waist, big arms, big delts, but just wasn't the sort of structure to do any damage.
Okay. We've got Mike Matarazzo in last. Obviously, you know him. Johan Schatz.
I was just trying to remember. I'm pretty sure tall, blonde-headed guy.
Yeah, it wouldn't surprise me because he's, I think it's, what flag's this one? I think it's Denmark flag or something. No, yeah, Austria. Austria, sorry.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it doesn't surprise me if he's a tall, blonde guy. So that's pretty much... Yeah, you've got John Sherman as well. I don't know if I've heard of him.
John Sherman was awesome, mate. He was such a short, thickly muscled bodybuilder. He made a comeback end of last year or start of last year in one of the pro shows. And he'd be probably pushing 40... 44, 45 at the moment, but he still looked good. He won the 93... USA's, if I believe, and he won it where he was in the same comp as Chris Conrad. Yeah, it would have been the USA's because Chris Conrad won the USA's overall, didn't he? John Sherman won the light heavyweights, I believe. So, yeah, that's right.
Yeah, but that's pretty much it. I mean, we pretty much wrapped that up. There was, you know, $275,000 prize money. Dorian won 100 of it. And yeah, I think only the top 10 got money at that comp because, yeah, I'm pretty sure it's only the top 10 got cash, but down to 10th they got five. Obviously, Lou got $5,000, which would have been nothing for him at that point because he was obviously, you know, the deal he made with Weider was reported around, you know, he got $250,000 a year or something like that. There was actually reports that he's getting $1 million a year or something, but I think that was kind of a bit fabricated.
Yeah, I think that might have been stretched a little bit.
Yeah, definitely. But obviously, you know, he made quite a bit from making that comeback and getting back into it. But Mick, that's pretty much all I've got on my run sheet. Have you got anything you want to mention on this show before we wrap it up?
No, mate, I'm the same. It was just good that we actually got this recording done because we had some dramas yesterday. And the new shop will be open in a few days, and I've been told the Wi-Fi in there is awesome, so we can record out of the shop without any issues whatsoever, mate.
Awesome, sounds good. And just as you were saying that, just as you were saying was having trouble recording, it just started to break up a little bit, so we'll wrap it's it up delayed. Here.
Yeah. All right, buddy.
I want to obviously thank our sponsors, bulknutrients.com.au, International Protein, Mass Nutrition, 40 stores around Australia and New Zealand. Species Nutrition, the main sponsor, and I'll just scroll down to the bottom of the page. Gripped Fitness Accessories. Check out their, obviously, their fitness line and their apparel and stuff that they've got out now. ATP Science, we had 2 minutes with a scientist on this episode with Matt Legg, so I want to thank him for that. And My Muscle Chef, their orders close Tuesday nights at midnight for the weekend's orders. So that's it for episode 104 of Aussie Muscle Radio. And remember, with Aussie Muscle Radio, the truth hurts.
Yeah! Aussie Muscle Radio is a presentation of RX Muscle Australia, the truth in Australian bodybuilding. Visit rxmuscle.com.au for all the latest bodybuilding news, videos, contest coverage, and so much more. Tune in next week at this same time for another round with Xavier Wills and Scott Goble, only on Aussie Muscle Radio.